You're listening to Safety Corner, powered by TCL and S1, for workers, by workers. Online and in-person health and safety programs and training available in 10-plus languages. Reach out to them at www.mys1.ca and DM them at my_S1 for more information.
Bon dia, Manny. Another day.
I love this show that you started that way, man. But we're always in the morning.
Yeah.
You're going to be both tired or what?
I can do both tired. Start talking a little Portuguese here and there.
No, and then the Italians Spanish. Will get all upset, and then they'll go like, why don't you do it in Italian, do it in Croatian, do it in every single language? And I'm like, it's not that kind of show, people.
We'll get some subtitles going everybody.
we'll put subtitles on the audio show.
No, on YouTube, you have an ability to hit subtitles. You're going to hit some
but
subtitles.
But I always joke, we put the subtitles on the audio show, if you guys are good with that.
Well, we're back at it again.
That was a great last show.
Yeah, thanks for Frank for coming out.
Frank was amazing. Frank was, and I'm sure I get the sense that he might return.
He probably will.
He'll be like, the Stig or something like that. We'll get him from Top Gear. He'll be the one guy always kind of showing up. But no, there was more stories that could have been shared, more insight, more everything.
Listen, Frank is well experienced. Frank has worked in a lot of aspects of construction. A lot of the people or the companies he works for are in that upper echelon of construction companies, or maybe upper echelon is not the best words for it, but the top companies in construction.
Up there.
And the level of safety that he's used to and that's being practiced on those sites is a different level of safety than you will find on an infill housing project or, a renovation or some type of.
So does the low rise have to come up to the high rise and the high rise have to come down to the low rise or what? We need to find a balance?
The balance is the regulations, which is the minimum requirements.
I always hated that word minimum in construction. But I always hated it.
When it comes to production, you don't want to hear the word minimum. When it comes to health and safety standards, you want to comply with the regulations. And now some of these projects that he works on, they go above and beyond of what's required. Right? Is that always a good thing? Maybe, maybe not. Some of these goals or initiatives may be unattainable. Some of them, I don't know. It comes from perspective. But as a worker, if you come from one sector of construction to that sector of construction, it's definitely an eye-opener or an adjustment when it comes down to the level of safety that that is being practiced.
I didn't actually ask him about, because he's been in it for so long. If it's improved, then I know that he did share. I don't know if he shared on the show or just before the show that the fatalities hasn't really improved. It's kind of plateaued out.
Again, it's data and stats. Ultimately, WSAB is gathering all of these stats. And then the Ministry of Labor takes.
But it's skewed.
Listen, you have to get the raw data. And the raw data is where the truth is, right? You have a lot of, you have traumatic fatalities, you have occupational illness fatalities, like how many people are dying of cancer that they got from projects exposure. That they work in the 80s and the 90s, right? So when you're looking at fatalities, you need to take some of these into consideration. And the way WSAB allows for the splitting of some of these groups and how they capture data for each one of these groups, so either by sector inside of construction or by types of injury or types of illnesses. This thing is pages and pages and pages and pages of numbers.
See, that's a good word, what it allows.
Well, they have...
We can't paint the picture of truth and just experience it. I would look at it like every project's got to submit a notice of project, right?
Yeah.
So when you complete a project and you close out a permit...
Every project that's over $50,000.
Correct. So smaller renters...
And a couple other requirements, but...
But the thing is, I think there should be a wrap-up. So at that wrap-up, I think you should be forthcoming where we had this many injuries, we had this many citations, we had this many fatalities. That should be public record.
Sure. How many active construction projects based on NOPs are active in the city of Toronto? Right?
Yeah.
And then based on the number of projects that are active,
then we'll get a just account of what's really going on. Safety-wise.
You know one thing's for sure, Manny? There's people that get paid a lot of money to play with these numbers, extrapolate these numbers, gather these numbers. They get paid a lot of money to do it, man. Should it be public? A lot of it is. WSAB, I believe, reports their stats and data.
It's never easy to find, though.
You got to go looking for everything.
Yeah.
It's not like it's on the front page of the news. Nope. But there's a lot of stats out there, and there's a lot of data being gathered. And there's some data that's being completely ignored. right? And I think it comes down to what's relevant to the workforce these days. You know, with one of our shows, we were talking about unemployment.
Yeah.
I think, you know, maybe that data should be more forthcoming, right? The Ministry of Labor gathers a lot of information. WSAB is gathering a lot of information on how many hours are being worked. Yeah.
Why can't they need that? Because that's how they calculate.
Sure. Why can't they just roll that out in a monthly thing and say,
you can't scare the industry and you can't scare the incoming industry.
Well,
and you can't reassure the outgoing industry.
I think
there's a lot.
I think there's a lot to unpack. And I think that in an effort to avoid misinformation and in an effort to combat disinformation, I love all these words. The only thing that combats all of that stuff is the truth.
Yes.
If you have an issue with something someone is saying, or if like someone has an issue with something I'm saying, great. Grab the evidence, grab the data. Let's talk about it. Yeah. If I'm to be corrected, I'll be corrected happily. You know what I mean? You have to be like that in this industry. You know how many times I've called Frank and said, Frank, man, I can't remember this regulation. I see the problem, but I can't find the regulation. Oh, no, Phil, take a look here. Da, 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 da. Okay. Right? You know, unfortunately, I have the resources. You know, we have chat groups of former MOL guys and inspectors and stuff. Just the other day, hey, I can't find this section. What section deals with the number of workers an employer has to have before they have a health and safety program? It's a question I put into my group yesterday.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Because I know an employer is required to have a health and safety program, but there is a line there. So just for everybody.
What did you say it was? It was six or six.
Six,
yeah.
Six or more.
So I remember because you brought it up on our show at that point.
Yeah. And I wasn't 100% sure because there's always, you know, like health and safety rep, there's a five or six cutoff point there. You know, for some of these things, it seems that five or six is the magic number for the threshold for you to have things in place.
Here's a question for you, because I know a lot of businesses, small businesses that have three and four tradespeople as employees under the business. But does that number also include the office admin?
Anybody that's a worker.
A worker, but if that office admin has to get onto the site.
Anybody that's a worker.
The definition, we covered the definition of worker on a previous show. We covered the
definition of worker. So it's anybody receiving monetary value, monetary compensation. But yes.
So if that admin person shows up on a site, they're being paid and they're doing work on the site, they're a worker.
That admin being paid, no matter where they are, classifies them as a worker.
Yeah.
Right? So it stops right there. That doesn't mean the workplace location. Workplace location will determine what regulations are applicable to you.
Yes. So that means a lot of businesses are at six.
Sure.
A lot.
And a lot of businesses don't have health and safety programs.
What are we going to get into today? But before we do that, you got a nice little snazzy polo shirt there, eh?
Well, normally
I see you come in here with darker ones, darker shirts, right? So all of a sudden this caught my attention. You got a nice snazzy one.
Well, one thing's for sure. My closet is filled with company swag, toques, golf shirts, sweaters.
Keep them coming.
Listen, I got more company name brands and logos on my clothes than I got anything else. But no, I'm wearing a Lisi Couture today. Lisi's one of my clients, High Rise Plumbing, a good group of guys. So I'm going to be sporting some swag.
Nice. All right.
Well, that's a nice little golf shirt.
It's great. Now you just got to get on the tee.
I'm not a golfer.
Everyone's been asking. I'm not a golfer.
Invite me to something that has guns or fishing rods, then I'll be there.
That's different. Fishing, I'm not a big fisher.
No, have you ever gone sport clay shooting and stuff?
I haven't done the clay shooting yet, but I'm not a big gun guy.
We should go, man. There's a place called Skeet School. They're on Instagram. I shout out to those guys. They're in the trades too, but I think they got like a little side skeet shooting
here in this hood, like around.
No, I think they're out of Hamilton or something along those lines. But it makes for a great day. You don't need to have a gun license or anything like that. They supply all the weapons and ammo and the clays and make it a couple hours and we can go shooting, man.
I could be down with that.
Well, listen,
we'll figure it out. We'll record a show there.
I feel like firearm training is one of the skills that I want to explore more.
What are we going to do today? Education Corner.
Okay. Today on Education Corner, we are covering duties and responsibilities of different workplace parties. Last on one of our episodes, we talked about the different workplace parties. Yeah. Workers, supervisors, employers, constructors. Today, we are talking about what they have to do on site. Right. And the Act, the Occupational Health and Safety Act, lays out these duties and responsibilities. And failure to follow through with your duties and responsibilities may result in injuries, death, or fines.
Summons, fines, convictions.
Oh, yeah, the whole nine yards, right? So the Occupational Health and Safety Act lays out the duties and responsibilities and a variety of other parts of the Occupational Health and Safety Act. It's pretty lengthy. That deal with workplace parties, duties and responsibilities, the roles of health and safety reps, joint health and safety committees. They deal with designating substances and owners and powers of an inspector and fines and penalties. And one of the shows we'll do after this, we'll get into fines and penalties and we'll kind of break down an investigation and what resulted to these companies, which is all public knowledge. So there shouldn't be any issue.
Unless is it go public knowledge the moment that you're issued?
No.
Or moment you're convicted?
Convictions become public knowledge.
Exactly. Right? That's what I thought.
So convictions become public knowledge, and the Ministry of Labor posts it up on their court bulletin section of their website.
So now here's a question. I'm just going into a gray area now. If there's a little bit of an understanding before a conviction happens, where it doesn't follow all the way through to a conviction.
Like charges get dropped?
Yeah.
Yeah, just like any court case.
Magically. Magically.
Listen, charges have been dropped, either all the charges or a portion of the charges.
So they wouldn't be public knowledge then, the ones that were dropped?
No, just the ones you were found guilty
of. Magically. And anybody who knows me, I'm spelling magically a certain way. Ends with Y.
I'm sure there's lots of inferences that can be made in terms of why things happen or didn't happen. You know, the enforcement officer's responsibility is to gather the evidence, compile the case, and kick it off to the lawyers. And these lawyers are the ones that are responsible for seeing the case through to the end. What happens between that point where the lawyers receive it and it goes all the way to the end?
We don't know.
Well, I do know.
Inner circle knows, but right. Public circle doesn't know.
Right. So you the best case, the way the system should work is the lawyers takes all the charges and go ahead with the prosecution. Right. Now we do have, or people that have been charged have the opportunity, different options, like on the back of your ticket, option one, option two, option three. Yeah. Right. So employers have the option, if you're charged in that situation, to discuss it with the lawyers. And see what kind of compromise, maybe that's the word.
See, this is where I'm going with it. I'm trying to figure out, and I guess you don't have to share any specifics or whatever, but I'm trying to figure out, has there been opportunities where I see there's an offense here on my left hand, but there's something else in my right hand. Do you see the offense? Do you see what's in my right hand? Can we have a conversation about, does that come up?
I don't know, Manny. I don't know what the conversations of some of these lawyers have, but this is what I do know. A lot of these lawyers that worked for the government are now on the defense side, meaning they left the government sector and they went to the private sector and they defend employers in construction.
Money.
Well, charges, lawyers, right?
No, but they make more money, I guess, in the private sector as a lawyer.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. Well, it's but no different for whatever than just rationale, criminal. There's lawyers. Again, for myself, I worked in the government. I left the government. Now I'm on the private sector doing what I did.
Yeah.
Just not with as much pizzazz, I guess. I don't know.
Okay. We were just getting off track. We got completely because something happened there and I was just trying to think of, and it was just, it goes to like, I was in an event yesterday and a younger person, a supplier, he was just asking me about, I heard you on the show a couple of times, Manny, talking about corruption in construction. And we kind of just went into it a little bit. And I was like, you really believe it's not there? Like, I don't understand how you're saying it's not there.
Just logically thinking, a lot of these lawyers go to the same conferences. A lot of these lawyers, no matter what side they're on, you know, eat at the same restaurants. A lot of these lawyers play on the same golf course. A lot of these lawyers belong to the same members-only club, right? That's you're ignorant if you don't.
My whole point is like the amount of, I guess, solutions are addressed before the courtroom. And a lot of that has to do with it never becomes public record at that point.
Listen, I got a court case coming up in November and maybe we'll do a little shine the light on that one a bit. Okay. And it's not a heavy case. It's a part one ticket, $300-something to the employer.
Okay.
Obviously, my client's going to fight it, right? And the first thing we're going to do, and you got three options on the back of the ticket, plead guilty with an explanation, or not guilty. Or something along those lines. I can't remember even off the top of my head. I haven't seen the ticket in a while. I haven't got one in a while, too. Yeah. But you got three options on the back. And that being said, my client's going to fight it.
Right? His or her right to do so.
Of course. So they're going to fight it. And the first step that we're going to do is set up a meeting with the lawyer and say we would require disclosure. So we'd like all of the inspector's notes, all the evidence that they've gathered so that we can defend themselves. But the second thing that we're going to note is that since the offense date, it's been a year and 8 months before a judge will see this case. Now,
what's the statute?
I don't know. I don't know. We're going to find out. But I feel like a year and 8 months is a little over.
I actually thought if it goes over a year, I don't know. Because it's the same rules, isn't it?
I think so. You're a due fair process.
You as a defendant can actually challenge that and go, listen, this has been taking too long.
Sure.
We want this dismissed. That could happen.
Well, sure, it could happen. Yeah. Right? And whose fault is that if it happens? It's the court's.
Yeah, it's the court's fault at that point.
Right? And that's their rationale for a lot of things. Oh, we plead out this case because it's in the best interest of the court not to hear this case because it's going to take a lot of time. It's going to take a lot of money. Right? How much does it cost to pay the judge, to pay the lawyers, to pay this, to pay that?
Yeah.
Right? To fight a $300 ticket.
Yeah. And they weigh that.
They 100%
they do. Weigh that.
Right? I've seen summonses go in court for $50. Right? You got to understand that not all of these judges are experts in health and safety law or whatever it is. Right? Some of these guys are experts in different things. Some of them, you know, they make cases. And
$50.
$50. I've seen tickets go for $25. Right? I've seen people go up there and say, listen, I have three kids to feed. I've been laid off. I've been this. I'm in debt. I cannot afford to pay your $300 ticket. What's the best you can do? And it becomes like a negotiation.
Yeah.
What's the best you can do? Yeah. Well, based on your circumstances, you know, $100 and 8 months to pay.
Will you require time to pay?
Yeah.
How much time would you require?
1 year. You put me on a payment plan, $5 a month. Like, come on. It's crazy. But anyways.
Let's get into duties and responsibilities. Yes, that was just a sidebar there, but understanding this whole point of Safety Corner is really about educating the tradesperson that's listening, the constructor, the contractor, the business owner, everybody. We want everybody to understand this is the industry.
Well, Simple as that. Really hammer the point home that, you know, preventing problems.
Yes.
Is a lot cheaper than solving these problems after they happen?
Yeah. And the definition of solving is
Going to court.
Yeah.
It's going to go paying your legal fees.
Yeah.
You know, like they're not
cheap. The best solution, in my opinion, is don't get into this situation.
Well, listen,
which means
you're going to have, as an employer,
it will come across your
It's going to come across your desk. Someone not tied off, someone not wearing their PPE, someone not wearing their mask, someone not doing this, someone not doing that. Right? It's going to happen. You either ignore it or you deal with it.
Yeah.
Right? There's only...
I know.
Right? And the law requires you to deal with it. But whether or not people do or just turn a blind eye to it, you know, that's a reflection of the company and the employer. Right? I'm sure there's a lot of employers that see it and don't say anything. And, you know, vice versa too, for in terms of I'm a subcontractor on a project. I'm a subcontractor on a project and the safety on that site is shit. Right? And it's the constructor's responsibility. I'll take care of my little world and my guys and make sure we're doing everything we have to do. But the constructor's sending you into areas that have no guardrails. So as a sub-trade who needs that job, I need that contract, I need to pay my workers, things are super tight. What do I tell my workers?
You don't tell them anything and then they let them go and then the situation happens.
Right?
Which is the worst thing that you can do.
You can't tell the constructor because you don't want to lose that contract.
Of course.
Right? So
you start creating ripples. They won't hire you the next
time. This guy talks too much about safety. This guy's voicing too much. I don't need these headaches. This guy's going to cost me extra money. This, and this. Right? That's the flip side of dealing with some of these problems on site.
We want people to understand on both sides their duties and responsibilities.
100%. So we're going to break it down. Again, this is very top level. I can open up the regulation. I will open up the regulations just to kind of show some of these things. But like duties for employers is 2 pages long.
Wow.
Yeah. So let's get into it. All right. So who are our players? We got our workers, our supervisors, our employers, our constructors. We also have owners and licensees and suppliers and stuff like that. But for the purpose of our immediate little world, workers, supervisors, employers, and constructors. Okay. So everybody has a duty and responsibility to comply with the law and make sure that they're being followed in the workplace.
Okay.
All right. So we took this off of the Workplace Safety and Prevention Services website. I noted
the URL is right there.
No. But no, sorry. The logo is in the bottom right. So that, you know, remember in high school, you're old enough Trillium. Still to go. Yeah. When you're doing essays, you have to do your footnotes and source all your information. I don't know if they still do stuff like that now, thanks to ChatGPT or whatever. Nah. But we used to go to encyclopedias and actually read and find, and you know, so you had to put your footnotes. So in this case, we're putting our footnote here of where we got this information, which is free for everybody. And we have the employer. Okay. What's the employer's number one responsibility? Comply with the laws.
Yes.
Number two, develop safety rules. Number three, train your workers. Manage your hazards, because hazards exist everywhere. Provide safe equipment. So, you know, give me a chainsaw that works and give me equipment that works. Don't give me stuff that's all busted up. And then this is the catch-all. Take every precaution reasonable for the protection of the workers.
The word reasonable, how is that defined?
It comes down to common sense, which you say isn't that common anymore. Right?
Everybody's version of common sense?
Listen, you walk onto a job site, there's a million ways for you to die.
Of course.
Right? If you take a look at it from that lens, if there's no workers there, there's no hazards. Or the worker is not going to get hurt if he's not on site. Yeah. I call that bubble wrap safety.
Yeah.
Right? So you got to find what's reasonable. Again, the law and the regulations dictate what's reasonable. Is this worker adequately protected against falls? If so, how?
Do you encourage your clients or the employers or employees to journal?
Take notes?
Daily notes for whatever
scope of work. So there's a couple schools of thought on that. To answer your question, no, I don't ask my supervisors to take notes.
Okay.
Why? Because it's a double-edged sword. From a prosecution, from an evidence standpoint.
You can use it, yeah.
It can be used against you.
Yeah.
I spotted this problem on Monday. Oh, the same problem exists on Tuesday. Oh, look, on my notes Wednesday also, the same problem exists. Thursday, the same problem exists. Friday, due to that problem, this worker died. You're I gather your notes.
Now. Yeah, exactly.
I see Monday through Thursday you identified this problem.
You ignored it.
Thank you. Now what did you do about it? Oh, well, I journaled it. Okay, good. Give me your driver's license.
Thank you for the discovery.
Yeah. Right? So it's a double-edged sword.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Should it be used to track some of your production stuff? Yeah, that's great. You want to use a journal, you want to use your phone, you want to use a computer program, whatever it may be. But you do want to make sure that if you are taking notes, and I take notes on my job sites every time I go, if you are taking notes, you are identifying a problem, or if you're identifying a problem, you're also identifying the solution. Because it's easy to point out problems. Right? Some people will say that's all we're doing over here on the show. You're just pointing out problems. What's your solutions?
But then journal a solution in there as well too. So sure. Then if you see this problem Monday, this is what I did. I addressed it on Tuesday. Here we go. We move forward. Sure. We
and then
see it again.
Then that's good note-taking and that's good problem solving. Yes. And you're proving that you've identified problems and solved
them. I don't know a single person who does that in the industry.
Neither do I.
Okay, right? Supervisor.
All right, supervisor. Supervisors required to make sure that workers are trained.
Yeah.
Okay. They need to manage hazards. They're the frontline foreman, supervisor on site. They're the ones that understand the scope of work. They're the ones that understand the hazards associated with that work. Ensure equipment is used safely. And when they say that, make sure it's being used as per the regulations, right? Enforce the safety rules. Mm-hmm. So make sure all your workers are following the safety rules. And then again, take every precaution reasonable in the circumstances for the protection of that worker. And this is where a lot of supervisors get charged on that whole take every
precaution reasonable. Because they don't. And there's evidence that they don't.
Yeah, there has to be sufficient evidence to prove it. But if you're not doing anything, that's evidence enough too.
Now, in a situation like that, I'm just trying to think of, does the ministry trump the manufacturer's of the equipment safety procedures?
So the regulations, the law, will always trump any document.
So it doesn't matter if a manufacturer's telling you.
There's more to it. There's more.
Okay.
A lot of the regulations, though, refer specifically to the manufacturer's instructions.
Got it.
Okay. The problem with that. The problem is some of these manufacturers come from China.
But to sell a product in Canada, you need CSA standards. No, you
depending
don't.
Depending on the piece of equipment, okay. Yes. Hard hats, for example, they need to be CSA standards.
Machinery, chainsaw, quick cuts.
I can tell you that at Home Depot right now, there's products being sold that do not comply with the regulations.
Okay.
Right? If there's a someone to buy it, they'll make it. So manufacturer's instructions, you know, especially a manufacturer that's international, just because their product complies with the regulations in Denmark doesn't mean that it complies with the regulations in Canada. All right. So some of these manufacturers build or design things to specs that don't match the requirements in here in Canada.
So in that situation, you'll start getting the law trumping that.
It all depends on case by case scenario. Yeah. What does the manufacturer's instructions say? Oh, the manufacturer instruction says to do it like this. And whatever way it is to do it like that is completely backwards and makes absolutely no sense. Right? Or the manufacturer instruction says you can add this attachment or you need to read very carefully. You know, one similar situation is one of our clients, they got these new battery power chainsaws. Okay.
Not a fan. Okay.
But these chainsaws have a lot more torque. So what does this mean? It means that the chaps
that are designed,
that were designed for gas powered chainsaws, they are not designed for the additional torque that these chainsaws have. So now you have to buy
good point.
PPE that is rated for that battery power chainsaw.
We have a major problem going on right now in every single major city all over the world where the standard guardrail on highways cannot stop a EV vehicle.
Why? Because of
the weight. Most EVs are twice the weight of a standard IC.
I didn't even think about that.
So they've done tests and EVs are going right through the rails, the guardrails.
I got some clients that installed.
So you're going to get cities start to rebuild guardrails now for all these EV traffic. So that's why you bring a valid point about those pants and everything like that for an EV rated tool.
To be honest with you, I think EV days are numbered. But that's a whole other conversation.
That's a different conversation. But I bring that up because it's like, okay, fine. Here's one solution. You brought in another product. So now you're not using carbon footprint, a internal combustion engine or whatever, not a gas-powered tool, but you're using a battery tool now. And it's creating a different problem now.
Sure. It's a problem that if you do your homework, you actually read the manufacturer's instructions, take a look and this and that. But what would happen in a scenario where a worker is using this battery powered chainsaw and inadvertently goes through his chaps or her chaps, goes through the chaps and cuts themselves? Well, the investigation is going to show that the manufacturer's instruction said, use this type of PPE or these types of chaps. Did you guys read this? Oh, no, I didn't even think about it. It's a chainsaw, it's a chainsaw. Okay, that's fair. But it says it right here.
Yeah.
So, could they be charged 100%?
Of course they can.
All right, workers. Report hazards, incident, and injuries to the supervisor. This report hazards here is a tricky one.
I'm thinking the word snitch.
Whoa, that's not the word that we use.
Okay. No, I'm thinking in the back of the head of the worker, thinking if I report this, I'm going to be labeled a snitch.
I hate that word.
Okay.
But that being said, can a worker be charged for not reporting a hazard?
I'm assuming yes.
The answer is yes.
Because it's the bystander idea. You saw something, you did nothing about it.
A worker can be charged. There is case law. Workers have been charged for not identifying a specific hazard. And then within a couple hours.
Not a snitch, you're a safety rep. You're an extension of a safety rep.
Listen, you know, if I'm driving on the 401 and I see a drunk driver swerving in and out of lanes,
I call.
I'm calling the police.
I take the license plate, I call, and I make note of where I'm at, yep. What marker, whatever.
Are you a snitch? I see an old lady.
I'm an extension of a safety rep.
I see an old lady getting robbed outside in the street and this and that. Am I going to step in? Well,
of course.
Depending on your character as a human. Okay. But yes, I would step in.
I get what you're saying. But in construction.
Am I going to call the? Am I going to witness? Am I going to? Yeah.
You stand by and do nothing, and then you could also be charged.
Yeah. And this has happened in previous cases where workers did not report. We're working in an area that had a really big opening. I think it was like a 14-foot drop. and had no guardrails, and they were working in that area for 2 or 3 days. And then on the third day, a drywaller had walked in material. I don't know exactly the specifics. Anyways, he fell, broke his leg, critical injury. And the inspector charged the plumbers who were walking and working around that opening. It had nothing to do with the opening besides the fact that they were working in the vicinity of
it. But they saw.
They saw it and never said anything, which ended up leading to multiple people got charged.
And I agree with that. I 100% agree with
that. Right? Well, if you're going to get charged for all the things you didn't say, that's a long list.
That's a different show because I've had someone on the show where she spoke up and the union moved her around, took her off that job.
There's an entire section in the Occupational Health and Safety Act that deals with work refusals and reprisals. Right?
And we're just getting started.
Oh my God, we're on page 4 of the Occupational Health and Safety Act. No, we're not on page 4, but we're only on section 25.
Tune in 2050 when we'll finally get to the end of it, when it's going to be all revised. Follow safe work procedures and rules.
Yeah.
How many people know those?
Depends. Do you have a health and safety program, employer? Do you communicate the procedures to your workers? Are they adequately trained? You know, do you have best practices?
It's no different than swinging a hammer. The first time you swung a hammer, you were shit. The 1,000th time, the 10,000th time that you swung a hammer, you're much better.
Here, are you ready for this one? Manufacturer's instructions. When you swing your hammer, Manny, do you wear eye protection?
You're supposed to.
According to who?
The manufacturer.
So every
hammer. Some of them actually says on the hammer.
Every manufacturer of a hammer says eye protection must be required.
Yep.
So technically, an animal inspector sees you swinging a hammer, and you're not wearing safety glasses,
you're in violation.
The contravention is it goes not following manufacturer's instructions.
It's a good one. That's a good one.
Yeah. Well, not to mention the fact there's a regulation that deals with eye protection when hazards exist. But
and I also, a manufacturer says that you should never use the ears of a hammer to pull out nails.
What do you mean? Isn't that what they're for?
No.
What the hell are they for then?
They're for grabbing the material.
Come on.
For look it up. You have a nail puller that's specifically designed from removing nails. You're not supposed to use the ears of a hammer.
Look at me learning something.
It depends on the hammer. Look at hammers specifically say that the eye goggles, safety wear, and then all of a sudden they do say that the ears are not designed for pulling. But we all do that. But a good framer, you guys can attack me all you want, but whenever you build a wall and you're getting ready to build, like lift up that wall, just put a cleat underneath there so you can lift it up. What do you use to grab that wall? Lock in the ears right into
100%.
It. And you lift it up and you put a piece of wood block and now you go. That's why they specifically designed a $400 nail puller.
Genius.
I wouldn't pay the $400 for it. But
no.
That's a different thing.
There you go.
No. So referencing the manufactured specs is valid. Everyone looks at the shiny new toy, but nobody really pays attention to what that toy can do.
Yeah. Hey, listen, you got to read the fine print with everything. All right.
Apply safety training.
Yeah. So if you're trained in working at heights, but you're not tying off, you're not really applying your knowledge. You're
not applying it at all.
No. Use the safety equipment provided properly. Right?
It's true. You can't get a harness and just tie it on any which way you want.
No.
You have to put it on properly.
Remind me to tell you the time we did a fatality investigation and the harness was on the guy backwards.
He had the hook on the front?
Or did they put the harness on after he fell?
Oh, good one. And they're in a
another
panic.
Class. Another That's class, another episode. All right. Do not engage in horseplay. This is actually a regulation.
You can't screw around on a job site?
This is a regulation that the other day when we did the episode and I showed the 1970 Occupational Health and Safety.
Yeah.
This one's in it. This may be one of the oldest regulations actually.
Horseplay.
Yeah. Yeah, horseplay. So,
and so definition of a horseplay would be what? Running around, screwing around.
No fucking around, man.
Okay, I got it.
That's how I classify it.
How many times guys are like throwing something at someone's crack? You know what I mean? Like they're working away and they're distracting them. That could result into an injury.
How many times has horseplay led into fights?
That's true. That's a good point too.
Right?
Testosterone kicking in.
I know, but again, we're not going to be practicing our jiu-jitsu on the second floor today.
Some are. Some are. Okay, what other? Well, that's worker. What's the fourth one?
So before we jump, the next one's duties of constructor. But let's bring up what the law says. Okay? So just so us to have Naxalone kits. That might be another class too. how many people are overdosing on site these days.
That's going to happen. We're going to discuss that.
Yep. All right. Duties of an employer. An employer shall. This is a very key word right here. Shall. The next key word, ensure. Okay? So don't forget those words.
Okay.
The equipment, materials, and protective devices as prescribed are provided. The equipment, materials, and protective devices provided by the employer are maintained in good condition. Mm-hmm. The measures and procedures prescribed are carried out in the workplace. And when they say prescribed, it means laid out in the regulations. Okay? The equipment, materials, and protective devices provided by the employer are used as prescribed.
Okay.
A building structure or any part of a workplace, whether temporary or permanent, is capable of supporting any loads that may be applied to it, as determined by the applicable design requirements established under the building code, in accordance with such other requirements as may be prescribed, in accordance with good engineering practice. Subclauses don't apply, et cetera, but those are the key ones for duties of an employer. Okay. Then you go into another section or the following section, and this deals with medical surveillance. You got to keep in mind some sectors that the Occupational Health and Safety Act deal with workers that are exposed or potentially can be exposed to biological, can be exposed to
airborne chemicals.
Airborne chemicals.
Talking about, like, I guess the first go-to is asbestos kind of thing.
Well, yeah, asbestos, yeah. A good asbestos company would have a medical surveillance program in place.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever come across a medical surveillance program for any employer.
You would think demolition companies would have this.
Well, again, you got to keep this in mind that this act applies to all workplaces, all employers, right? So this may not even apply to, well, it's not that it doesn't apply to construction. It's not only applying to construction, it is applying to other sectors of employers within the industry of a variety of different things, right?
Got it, yeah.
You know, a mine, for example.
It's true.
Right? This would apply to
gaseous, you know, like you can, air.
Right. Yeah. So it just comes down to medical surveillance. Naxalone kits, training, additional.
This is right from the book, right?
This is the book.
Okay.
And then we get into additional duties of an employer. Again, there's more of, how come we had, hold on a sec. My bad. I was looking at the wrong section here. So 25 sub 2. Provide information, instruction, and supervision to a worker to protect the health and safety of the worker. Medical emergency, diagnosis, treatment, provide upon request, information in possession of an employer. When appointing a supervisor, appoint a competent person. Competent.
So the definition of the employer's competency.
No, it's the law's definition of competent. And competence defined as knowledge, training, and experience.
Okay.
Okay. Acquaint a worker or a person authority over a worker with any hazard in the work and in the handling, storage, use, disposal, transport of any article, device, equipment, or biological, chemical, or physical agent. Afford assistance and cooperation to a joint health and safety committee or a health and safety rep. Only employ in or about a workplace a person over such age as may be prescribed in construction. That's 16.
That's the cutoff, right?
Yeah. You can only be 16 or older to work.
What's the fine that you get if you get your 14-year-old on there?
I don't know.
Okay, but there's a fine probably.
And fail to ensure that the worker is of required
adequate age or whatever. Okay.
So right there, not knowingly permit a person who is under such age as may be prescribed to be in or about a workplace. And then this one, 25-2H, take every precaution reasonable in the circumstances for the protection of the worker. Post in the workplace a copy of the act, right? That's why you see green boards hanging off the safety boards all the time.
Here it is. I see it.
Prepare and review at least annually a written occupational health and safety policy and develop and maintain a program to implement that policy.
Six or more.
Right. So if you don't have six or more workers,
you don't have to do
the program.
Got it.
You should still have some game rules on how your worker should not.
There's a generic regarding notice project outline, right? Which is, what is it? The 1, 2, 3, 4 thing?
Yeah, yeah. There's some basic posters and stuff like that, but that's a little different than this. So post in conspicuous location of the workplace a copy of the occupational health and safety policy, advise workers of results, notify director. When you see anything that says director in the act and regulations, that means the Ministry of Labor.
The director is the Ministry of Labor.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay.
I didn't know that one.
So that's 25 to H.
Sorry, you scroll back a tiny bit. I noticed, what was it, H or I?
Where are you? Right here?
Yeah, right there. So material prepared by the ministry, both in English and the majority language of the workplace.
Yes.
So all of a sudden, you got to look at your workforce now.
Yes.
And that's translation of whatever. So if you got 99% Portuguese.
Well, listen, but take it, let's look at from the reverse side. I'm an employer. I have a worker. Worker's not tied off. Worker falls off a building. Let's say he gets seriously injured. Investigation happens. I go speak to the worker. The worker only speaks Portuguese to the point where I need a translator. Well, I speak Portuguese, but an inspector would need a translator to communicate with this individual.
Yes.
Right? Then you can imagine how many times people get in front of an inspector. I no speak. I no understand. Talk to my wife type deal.
Right? Okay? I get it.
It's happened. But in that case, while you're doing the investigation, you go up to the employer. Hey, Mr. Employer, how long has this guy been working for you? Oh, you know, Jose has been working for us for 3 years. Okay, great. Do you have a health and safety program? Yes, it's right here. It's beautiful. Look, 300 pages of, this is all the beautiful things we do. Okay, that's great. You guys do inspections and safety talks and stuff? Yeah, we do. Okay, good. Let me see them. Start seeing them, paperwork, English. Hey, do you know since he's worked here for 3 years that Jose doesn't speak English? Well, yeah, I know that. So how are you guys communicating this stuff, this information to him? You know, I say it, and then the other guy, he says something, he translates it for me. And that's how it's been done for the last 50 years.
That's explaining the duties of the work that's involved, but it's not explaining the safety duties of the worker.
Anything. How do you communicate with someone that doesn't speak English?
Yeah, you don't.
You go to another country and you don't speak the language in that country. How well are you communicating?
You're not.
Right? So no, do we expect any difference on a job site?
No, it should be. You have to cater to the language.
Yeah. And maybe we'll have 100%. One whole episode on how S1 is solving that problem. But yeah.
12 languages?
10 languages right 10 now languages in our system.
Right now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, we trained just last week.
In what?
Italian. These workers are coming from Italy.
Oh, yeah, you mentioned this.
Did
yeah.
I mention the
yeah.
specialized team that's yeah. coming to work on one of these big infrastructure projects? And they have to.
We need that work.
I was told that these guys are specialized and et cetera, et cetera, and they're all from Italy.
Okay.
So now we got to do training for these guys. Nobody speaks English.
Specialized in what?
I don't ask. All right.
Construction skills.
Additional duties of employers. Okay, so we even go even further. This one is where it starts talking about the establishment of the health and service for workers, occupational health and services established. And then we get down to duties of a supervisor. And as you can tell, this is a lot shorter now.
Extremely.
Yeah, because it's only a couple keywords here and that's all you really need. A supervisor shall ensure
that a worker
works in the manner and with the protective devices, measures, and procedures required by this act and the regulation, and uses or wears the equipment, protective devices, or clothing that the worker employer requires to be used or worn.
Okay.
Okay. Make sure your workers are following all the rules and make sure they're using all the protective devices that they're required to be using.
Additional duties of the supervisor.
So without limiting the duty, a supervisor shall advise a worker of the existence of any potential
or plumbers and the drywall.
What do you mean?
The story you shared about.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this comes down to the supervisor duties, but we'll get into the workers. Advise a worker of the existence of any potential or actual danger to the health and safety of the worker to which the supervisor is aware. So if you know something can seriously hurt somebody or kill somebody, as a supervisor, you're responsible to communicate that to the worker. And in construction, since there's a million ways to go, you know, you can see how some of these health and safety programs become 300 pages long.
Now, is the supervisor of one trade obligated to tell the supervisor of another trade that they see something that is in contrast to the act?
What I can tell you is that effective communication between management and the people that can solve problems once problems are identified needs to happen.
So basically it's a yes, they have to.
Right?
Which makes a lot of sense. that supervisor for that trade and that scope might not be on the site at that time, but the other supervisor or another trade could see it. Sure. They need to make it.
Sure. And you go to the project supervisor and say, hey, listen, by the way, I was on the 17th floor and I noticed all the fire extinguishers got stolen and there's no fire extinguishers up there and someone's welding.
I'm bringing it up.
I'm letting you know, maybe you guys should go bring a fire extinguisher up there. Or maybe that trade, whoever.
Now it's on their duty. They take care of it.
Listen, the one thing's for sure. You want to identify problems and you want to solve problems. Whichever way you got to solve them, they need to be solved. Okay, where were we?
B.
Where so prescribed, provide a worker with written instructions as to the measures and procedures to be taken for protection of the worker. Written. You know, and that throws a little curveball into, you know, online systems.
Because it's sent digitally to the workers.
Yeah, so there is some debate from the inspectorate in terms of other regulations that require written. The word written is there. I think it's in the traffic protection plan, traffic control plan.
So a digital communication is not considered written?
I'm not saying that.
Is that how it
translates to me? All I'm saying is that the regulation or this section right here is very specific with their words, and the word is written. And then 27.2c, take every precaution reasonable in the circumstance for the protection of a worker, right? You didn't tell these guys to tie off. You didn't verify that they were tied off. You didn't verify this. You didn't verify that. You didn't double check this. Okay. Did you take any precautions, let alone reasonable? And then we get into duties of the worker. So that 27, this is where, you know, things get really sticky for supervisors. How does a supervisor prove that they did this?
Yeah.
Right? And that's what it comes down to, proof.
In the event something happens, you follow the train. That's all it is.
You play Sueca?
Sueca?
Yeah, the Portuguese card game. It's like Brisk.
No?
Don't
play any cards.
No, so it's like trump cards. So you gotta, depending on, you put down your trump cards to be, you playing? No. But that being said, you want to have as many trump cards as possible. More inspections, more safety talks, more proof of communication. More
as
proof.
A supervisor.
Yeah.
You just want to load it up in the event.
Yeah. Right? But if something still happens and you loaded it up, you know, the questions will be, well, where did you write on these inspections? Were you actually on site or were you sitting in your truck filling out forms? So a lot of this is case by case scenario, but there are ways that supervisors can protect themselves. Like I've done investigations where I've only charged the worker and I didn't charge the supervisor.
Because you did your homework and you saw that the supervisor.
I did my investigation and, you know, the likelihood of this supervisor getting charged because they did this, 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 and this, this is slim to none because that's due diligence.
Yeah, you did it.
Right.
So it's interesting that there's only four for the worker.
Oh, no.
There's more?
Oh, yeah. It's all of this.
Oh, all of that. Okay.
A worker shall work in compliance with the provisions of the act and the regulations. So follow the law. Two, use or wear the equipment, protective devices, or clothing that the worker's employer requires to be used or worn.
Depending on the scope of work.
Sure.
What's involved.
Yeah, but then you got some standard PPE, obviously, like a hard hat. Yeah. That must be on at all times.
Safety footwear, goggles, hard hat.
Well, and even your eye protection.
Yeah.
Right? But if you have an employer that says everyone shall wear eye protection at all times on the project.
Then you need to. No?
Well, listen,
I'm not giving a harness to, well, I was going to say I'm not giving a harness to a painter, but it depends on where they're painting.
There is such a thing as too much safety.
Mm-hmm.
There is, in my opinion, right? There has to be a balance here when it comes to safety. Otherwise, we're all just going to walk around in bubble wrap and make sure you don't get a splinter.
Then right? Work won't get done.
No, we have to understand that construction is a dangerous job. Even with the best safety practices, things can go wrong, right? We're talking about thousands of pounds of machinery and equipment moving around, you know? It's that human variable that is the one that's always harder to kind of manage.
Yep.
All right, where were we?
Report C.
Report to his or her employer or supervisor the absence of or defect in any equipment or protective device of which the worker is aware and which may endanger himself, herself, or another worker. Okay? You're required by law to report unsafe conditions.
Here's a stupid question.
None of them are stupid. and some of them are stupid.
Will the act ever get genderless?
Oh, why? Because you saw the
I'm seeing himself, herself, he, she.
Yeah.
I'm seeing that. I'm just saying, is there a conversation about going genderless? I don't know. I'm just asking.
I don't know. I have no clue.
It makes no sense to me, but I don't agree with it. But I think he or she is fine with me.
I think there's more important items to address when it comes to health and safety.
Yeah, exactly, right?
That term of verbiage, but whatever.
Okay. No, that was just my stupid question for the day. That's fine.
Yeah, it was stupid. See, Manny, there are such things stupid questions. <Just saying.
laughs> I bring it up because you know what? I bet you there's a listener going, fuck, thanks, Manny, for bringing that up because I was wondering that myself.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's fair. So I don't know. I don't know.
I don't get into that stuff, man.
No, whatever.
I just know that the labels on bathrooms are being changed right now.
Oh, my God.
At taxpayers' dollars. So that's what I don't fucking get. So be it. Yeah, okay. So no worker shall. No worker shall. Okay. Is that what you're at? We're not there yet.
No.
Oh, you're not there yet. Oh, you stuck up D. Sorry.
Yeah. Report to his or employer supervisor any contravention of the act or the regulations or the existence of any hazard or which he or she knows.
If you see it.
So it's almost the same as seeing. Yeah. And then no worker shall remove or make ineffective any protective device required by the regulations or by his employer without providing an adequate temporary protective device. And when the need for removing or making ineffective the protective device has ceased, the protective device shall be replaced immediately.
See, that brings up the tie off on a roof.
That brings up the guard on a grinder. I'm going to remove this guard.
Yeah.
So that I can do this cut. And then I'm going to put the guard back. Or maybe never put it back.
It brings up that little moment of you trying to do something that you need to get done, but you can't be 1,000% safe. Doesn't that bring that up?
This has to do with removing or making ineffective any protective device. Right? So I'm going to remove something that's designed to protect me.
Get rid of the water on a quick cut. You're breathing in all that airborne dust, silica dust.
That could be considered that.
Right? Yeah, the guard is another one. Taking your goggles off and you squinting your eyes as your protection.
What? The eye squint? That's not good enough?
Yeah, that's good.
Use or operate any equipment, machine, device, or thing, or work in a manner that may endanger himself, herself, or any other worker.
That's a big one for me, eh? Sure. I have a major problem if someone's doing something stupid and someone else is going to get hurt as a result of that stupid act.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I always spoke up during
this guy's on the skid steers doing Papa Wheelies?
Well, it wasn't so much. You know what it was? In my days, my biggest problem that I had, whether it was my job site or the subtrade or neighboring job site, was the quick cut without a hose on it. And then their thought process is, oh, I'll give the neighbors all car washes for their car. I'm like, you don't get it. We're all walking around here, and I don't want to be wearing a mask and, you know, a hazmat suit. Just put the hose on.
Silicosis is easily in the top three occupational illnesses.
And it's not...
I guess beside cancer and...
Yeah, but it's not discoverable until much later on. So you could do it this week and in your 50s or 60s, whatever. Oh, yeah,
buy now, pay later. That's what I call that. Buy now, pay later. And the problem is now, let's say it is directly related to the workplace. You know, I've been in construction for 40 years, let's just say, and I've been sucking up asbestos or sucking up silica dust all this time. And now I'm 60-something, I got cancer. Should I be compensated by WSIB?
My opinion, yes.
How do I prove that I got this illness in the workplace?
That's the challenge.
Why?
The other one I have are drywallers.
Sure.
You should technically be wearing respirators when you're rotozipping any piece of drywall. Airborne dust.
There's a lot of nasty stuff in the dust on construction sites.
Lots I had a drywall guy teach me a really simple lesson, and it's brilliant. He took dust off the ground, off the floor, the subfloor, and just poured a little bit of water on it. And he goes, that's what's going on in your lungs right now.
Oh, yeah.
The moisture in your lung and that airborne drywall dust is mixing with that moisture inside your lung right now, becoming a paste.
I'll never forget. One of my first jobs, I was laborer for bricklayers. Best job I ever had, man. I learned so much. You know what I learned? I learned books are lighter than bricks. That's what I learned at that job.
Books are lighter than bricks.
Yeah, that's what I learned. But that being said... You can imagine, you know, 16, 15, 17, stuff like that, that age group.
Oh, you don't care. You're invincible.
I would go home and I'd blow my nose and chunks of black stuff. Black. Black in the shower. Who's giving me a mask? I didn't even have a ladder to climb the scaffold. You'd climb the side of the scaffold.
But everybody does it, right?
Oh, you'd like to think that people are educated enough to protect themselves. But if you're not afraid of that...
But you're going to have respiratory problems later on. You're going to have hearing problems later on. We all know, like, listen, a table saw is beyond the limits of health and safety respectable levels. Turning on a table saw.
Sure. I think the decimal...
I can't remember. We did a show.
It's 81 or 82.
Yeah, exactly.
Decimal 80, 81.
But the moment you take an impact gun and you're drilling a 3-inch construction screw and it's within 6 inches of your ears, it's way beyond the acceptable level.
Oh, yeah.
But the kids just do it because it's done. But I'm just telling you, as a 50-year-old, it affects you later on.
And it depends on the nature of work you guys do, like workers do, and what they're exposed to. But, you know, you can look at electricians and say carpal tunnel is probably one of their biggest issues.
Yeah.
Right? I know an electrician, cousin of mine, he's had 2 surgeries, one on each wrist already for carpal. And he's, I'll say, under the age of 45. Under.
Wow.
Right? Plumbers, backs. That's, you're hunched over every single day.
Uh-oh. We see an information here? We don't need to see. I'll get rid of that.
Yeah.
No, I'll get rid of that.
Cut that out. Don't worry, I'll cut
that out. So it was the last one. The last one is the back to the horseplay.
Yeah. This is where it comes down to.
It's clearly defined now.
Yeah. Here. Engage in any prank, contest, feat of strength.
Feat of strength?
Yeah, well, I can lift more than you. Watch this.
Oh, fuck, that happens all the time.
Unnecessary running or rough and boisterous conduct.
That's a typical Monday.
Depending on the trade. I don't know, man.
You know what? I mean, how do I say that? Little pranks are okay. Like, small pranks, okay.
I don't know.
Not according to the health and safety book. I get it.
What I'm saying is that you should, I think my perspective on this is that you should try to be as professional at work as possible. And that's a different application to speaking to people in an office versus speaking it to the guys on site.
It makes sense.
No, right? You're not going to have people in the office unless they're doing a push-up competition or something like that. I'll do more push-ups than you, but how often does that really happen?
If I was rewriting this, I'd be like, try to not engage in any pranks.
Yeah, no. Please do. Please don't speed.
Just no. Try. Make an effort today, boys and girls. No, then, no. This is pretty straightforward. That's horseplay.
Yeah, and then
dangerous. It's dangerous. That's the primary reason. It's dangerous.
Well, listen, it's important to know. Well, we're talking about the boisterous conduct.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it can get out of hand.
You can get out of hand, you're right, and then all of a sudden it escalates. But then also you could misstep, not realize your surroundings, and then fall, slip.
Oh, yeah. I've literally seen videos. I think I posted one on Instagram. These guys were literally practicing their jiu-jitsu on the second floor of a house, and they're practicing the moves, and they're da-da-da-da-da. And the guy grabs and he flips him and dislocates his shoulder. Is that a workplace injury now?
No.
Really? It happened in the workplace.
That's a workplace injury? So you're going to explain that to WSIB?
I don't know.
What part of the trade required you to do that move?
I don't know.
There's going to be an investigation. There's no way WSIB will approve that. I understand
it happened. It all depends on the story you tell WSIB.
Yeah, that's true, right? But it's like,
right?
If you have a video that's online that's got a million views on it.
No, that's a different story, right?
That's interesting. Okay.
But I'm sure a lot of stories that WSIB has heard aren't necessarily the truth.
Of course.
Sure.
It's a painted truth.
And if you go even further back and look at the history, it used to be called the Workers' Compensation Board.
Yeah, yeah.
They ended up going bankrupt because everyone was... Well, let me rephrase that. There
was a set amount of abusers.
Yes. The system was greatly... Guys are playing soccer and twist their knees on and then come in Monday and take a little spill and say, oh, I busted up my knee. I'm off for 6 months later.
Work miscomp.
And there's no early and safe return to work. And no. Okay, you're at home for 6 months? Okay, great.
My back.
Oh, yeah. There was definitely some professional milkers out there. That's for sure.
Okay. Now, duties of owners.
Now, this isn't one that was on the list for us to discuss, but now we've got it in front of us, we might as well talk about it. So the owner of a workplace that is not a project.
What does that mean?
It's not a project. It can be an industrial facility. It can be a mine.
So a place of business.
A workplace that is not a project.
Okay.
So the owner of a workplace that is not a project shall ensure that facilities are provided, facilities prescribed to be provided or maintained, Workplace complies with the regulations. No workplace is constructed, developed, reconstructed, altered, added to accept in compliance with the Act and the regulations. Then it goes into mine plans, plans of workplaces, et cetera, et cetera.
It covers all of it.
Duties of owners. This is one, maybe we'll just have a quick little conversation. Mattress. Yeah. I think this one stemmed from, remember the, during COVID, the truckers couldn't get access to the washrooms, and then the minister and they came out and say, oh, no, we're going to make bathrooms accessible. And
da-da-da. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Remember the en route service? I can't remember what it was. They weren't allowing the truckers to use. Yep. So they stood up for our truckers. Shout out to all our truckers, by the way.
Of course.
Thanks for...
Please do it again.
Thanks for that protest. That really helped everybody. And I'm being serious.
Yeah, I'm too.
Subject to subsection 2, the owner of a workplace shall ensure that the access to a washroom is provided on request to a worker who is present at the workplace to deliver anything to the workplace or to collect anything from the workplace for delivery elsewhere.
Pretty standard, man.
Yeah, makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Let any worker use your washroom.
Of course.
Well, here's some exceptions.
Yeah.
Access to a washroom at a workplace is not required if providing access would not be reasonable or practical for reasons relating to the health and safety of any person at the workplace, including the worker who requests to use a washroom.
I don't follow.
Neither do I.
Two, I don't understand that. I don't understand.
Okay. What I'm guessing is that's an exception. So you have to make 29.1 says
practical
the owner of a workplace shall ensure, but exception 2 deals with
related to health and safety.
Exceptions, I guess.
I don't know what that means. Okay.
B, if providing access would not be reasonable or practical, having regard to the circumstances, including but not limited to the nature of the workplace, the type of work at the workplace, the conditions at the work at the workplace, the security of any person at the workplace, and the location of the washroom within the workplace, or if the washroom is in or can only be accessed through a dwelling. Basically, the way I'm reading this is everybody, if you're an owner, you have to provide washroom access.
Yes.
But if there's some exceptions to that, or there's some loopholes, or maybe you don't want to, then you can hide under the exceptions and not have to.
But that doesn't make any sense, because the first point is saying that you have to have it. The second point is saying you don't need to allow it.
Welcome to understanding law.
Okay.
Right.
So figure that one out later on.
Yeah, that one. Right. And then we get a duty of project owners. Before beginning a project, the owner shall determine whether any designated substances are present at the project site and shall prepare a list of the...
What's that called again?
It's
called...
Designated Substance Report.
That's it.
DSR.
Yeah. And now that's mandatory on all jobs, isn't it?
Yeah, right there.
No, but it wasn't mandatory for the longest time.
No, this regulation's been in there for
How long?
I'll say at least 25 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because when I got started, I just learned about doing it. And then some people were telling me, oh, that's not a mandatory thing for you to do. And I was like, I'm doing
it. It's a requirement of the owner.
That's how I discovered. Well, no, I actually educated the clients that I had to do this. I discovered this because someone educated me about airborne lead paint.
Oh, yeah, that's good
stuff. So you find an older house in Toronto and you confirm that it's lead paint on the trim and you're demoing that lead paint. Mm-hmm. You cannot use any mechanical tools to remove that trim. You can't cut it with a rift sieve.
There's lots of controls that need to go
put into place. You can't go airborne with it. Yeah, that's why.
Or you can have PPE, or you can have enclosures. There's a variety of different
ways. We wrapped them with the yellow garbage bags, taped them up. It was considered hazardous waste because of the lead.
You didn't just wait for the weekend to do when there's no inspectors working and just do all the demolition and just throw it all in the garbage?
Nope.
You guys did it right?
Did it properly.
Wow, good for you.
Lots of yellow bags and lots of red tape, I believe.
Yeah.
Lots of wet downs and no reciprocating saws to cut it down.
Yeah, no.
All pry bars open up.
Do you don't want that?
So I knew about asbestos, but I didn't know about lead paint.
Well, even with asbestos, man, you know, it's you find it in buildings, obviously, that are built. Anything prior, I think, with the cutoff point was like 1973 or something, 75. I can't remember. Maybe even 80s. But, you know, asbestos was used a lot, man.
Yeah.
But if you compare the amount of buildings and the amount of demolition projects and the amount of notifications to the Ministry of Labor for asbestos, the numbers don't add up or match. Listen, it costs extra money to get rid of asbestos. So, you know, like I know when I was at the MOL, you know, you driving through these neighborhoods, oh, yeah, we're going to do a demolition and this and that. Okay. So, you're keeping an eye on your neighborhood. And then, you know, that was a Friday. And then Monday, the whole house is demolished. And you're like, holy shit, these guys knocked down an entire house in 2 days, gone. The only thing left is two walls. And you're like, where the hell did all this stuff go? Meanwhile, you do it on the weekend. There's very little enforcement. There's no proactive enforcement on the weekends. So I don't know if they changed it now.
And even on Saturdays?
No, man, come on. It's government workers.
Wow.
Now we're giving the loopholes.
No, I get it. But then neighbors are complaining on a Sunday. No? I know that you can work.
If they complain, they complain. What do you get? Slap on the wrist? How much money did they save putting in a bunch of illegal workers or workers that don't understand that there's asbestos there and get them to remove it all?
PPE and they're cutting the shit out.
PPE costs money.
Oh, wow. Scary as shit.
Right? So that's how they got rid of a lot of asbestos.
I did it because I was on the site. I was curious. I wanted to look at it. I don't want to be anywhere.
You asked the right questions.
Simple as that. Yep. We did the test. We did 11 tests. Different materials. We discovered lead and then a little bit of asbestos in tiles.
Oh yeah.
So we find all kinds. And we removed it. That's it. That takes care of that, or is it a different one?
No, that's I think is going to be enough for
an hour.
Are we at an hour already?
Over.
Oh my God. Can we watch this last video and then we'll wrap it up?
Well, you have another video? Okay, good. Let's do that. We'll all wrap it up.
So we talked about duties, requirements, constructors, employers, workplace parties, et cetera, et cetera. This is a video that we posted, got reposted. But this is Full Sheets. Full Sheets is a construction worker out in BC. They have an awesome Instagram page. Really cool guy. And so this happened here in Markham. I think this was a year and a half ago, 2 years ago.
I've seen a lot of rebar.
Oh, a lot of rebar. You guys ready?
What happened here? Oh. Nobody did a soil test?
So, no, that's a slab level, and that's a complete collapse or failure of the false work. Fortunately, nobody died on this one. But this is a complete engineering failure.
Oh, wait, so this is on a high-rise?
This is on a high-rise project.
That's a floor, prep floor for concrete pour.
Well, let's look at it again.
Whoa. How did that happen?
Someone made a big mistake here.
I like the Italian at the very end there.
Right?
The Italian with those hands.
Oh, yeah. Or Portuguese, but. Portuguese. But this
Holy, lucky nobody was underneath.
No, this resulted in no injuries, no fatalities.
But it could have.
Oh, yeah. This is a reportable incident, definitely to the Ministry of Labor.
Did they?
I don't know.
That you know?
I don't know. I can't speak to this.
Well, it's online.
I don't know if Ministry of Labor has Instagram. I don't know.
I think they do. I think there's a whole team. I mean, that's scary.
Scouring social media.
Man, that is just like, those are arrows if you're underneath there. Like, that's just...
You're done. You fall into that mess. You're protruding hazards. Yeah, you're getting... It's a shish kebab. Right? But this is a complete failure. Yeah. And the rationale or the reasoning behind or contributing factors to some of this failure or possibility could have been, you know, a lack of engineering, which I doubt. It could have been not enough shoring. Not enough structural support.
It's those two.
Usually when a failure happens, it's something like that.
There's a routine, though, on each floor. Like, you're putting so many...
There's an engineer drawing for this, right?
Yeah.
You got to double check to make sure your drawing matches the work you're doing. Right? And that happens a lot. We don't have enough posts.
It's a good thing that nobody got hurt.
It's a great thing that nobody got hurt.
When did this happen?
I'll say a year and a half ago, possibly 2 years ago.
Out west.
Oh, West? No, Markham.
This is Markham.
Yeah, this is Ontario. Yeah, listen, a lot of videos that we post, or let me rephrase this. A lot of videos that we receive, you know, we try not to post them right away because investigation's ongoing or people are going to get put on blast and, you know. But every once in a while, you know, something serious like this, like I had a video sent to me, I don't know if you remember the fatalities that happened in London where it was another structural failure. The video that got sent to me, I had a difficulty posting it. Like, I looked at it, I was like, holy shit. Because it shows the guy's going down. Right? And those guys got, that company got charged. Multiple companies got charged in that case. And they got convicted. And you know what? Maybe we should do, we'll show the video of what happened. We'll do this for another episode. We'll show the video of what happened. And then we'll show what the fines were for these guys. And you see if justice was served.
I'll let you know.
Yeah, give me your.
I'll share my opinion on that.
But structural failure, structural collapse. This is a big one in construction. Whenever you're building something, whenever you're tearing something down. Yeah, failure.
I wonder how many workers there actually said, lucky nobody got hurt.
The best was the video after while they were fixing this that got sent to me where nobody was tied off.
Really?
I try not to put that one on, but
they're repairing this and they're not doing it properly repairing it.
No.
How do you even start? I guess it's like spaghetti, man. You got to just untie all that shit.
A lot of machines and a lot of workers.
Whoa.
Right? But that was a mess. And that could have gone easily sideways. This could have easily, you know, killed a few guys there.
Of course it could have.
Easily.
Of course.
And I think that's what we need to keep in mind, too. We talk about, yes, fatality stats. But, man, do you know how many close calls there are where this happens and nobody died luckily by whatever you believe in, the grace of God or whatever it is?
I know.
And you look at this and you're like, holy shit. Right? But structural failures and structural collapses. Add this one to the list of some of the many ways you can die on construction. Right?
Not a good
but again, I don't want us to think that, you know, it's completely crazy out there. It's not. But we are definitely highlighting some of the things that, you know, people aren't exposed to or don't see or don't fully understand that this happens on a more frequent basis.
I would say it's completely preventable.
This one definitely is.
Yeah.
Again, Frank said 100%, but I'm more inclined to the 99%.
Still better than what's going on right now.
Oh, it's crazy out there.
Thanks so much, bro.
Another Safety Corner episode on the wraps.
We got to drop it, and then we'll see. What are we going to put next? What do you have on the schedule next?
I don't know. You know what I think, man? I think we're going to ask some of our Instagram followers.
They're going to start chiming in once we start posting, I guarantee you.
Yeah, I know. But
Tackle that.
Maybe we'll let them decide. What do we want to tackle next? You know, there's ever-ending topics to discuss in health and safety. And there's never-ending guests that we can ride along with, which is nice. So, yeah. You know, we're going to mix up. Maybe we take the show out of the studio.
Somehow.
Manny?
Somehow. I've done that before. It's not the biggest. It's a bit of a pain. But
listen, I like jumping in holes and going to places where people don't go.
So oh, trust me. I would love to set up on a site. I would love to do that. We have to figure that out.
I can make it happen.
We have to figure that one out.
I can make it happen. No worries.
For now, we got to get out of here.
All right, Manny. Thanks again.
All right, we're gone.
You're listening to Safety Corner, powered by TCL and S1, for workers by workers. Online and in-person health and safety programs and training available in 10-plus languages. Reach out to them at www.mys1.ca and DM them at my_S1 for more information.